Item number six, North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, Bering Sea Halibut Management, and this is also a briefing. Bill Twight, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commission members. As the chairman said, I'm here today to provide you with an update on what the North Pacific Council did this year relative to managing the bycatch of halibut in the groundfish fisheries. I'd like to do a couple things with this briefing in addition to that. First off, give you some background on the North Pacific Council. It occurred to me I've been representing the state of Washington on the council for over a decade now, and I can't remember when I last briefed you on what the council is and what we're doing. So I've got a little bit of that for start. Then I wanted to give you an overview of what we did in 2015, and then I wanted to look forward to what the council's next steps are regarding managing halibut bycatch. So first off, what is the council? We are analogous to the Pacific Fishery Management Council. We are the body created under the Magnuson-Stevens Act to, working together with National Marine Fisheries Service, manage the U.S. federal fisheries off of Alaska. We work closely with the state of Alaska in doing this, and in most cases, we do jointly manage the fisheries. We, as the council, make recommendations to NIMS. You will all remember from working with Pacific Council that it is NIMS that actually creates the regulations and then implements and enforces those regulations. Our geography is huge. We cover all of the Bering Sea, the Gulf of Alaska, and the Arctic Ocean. We have now six fishery management plans to do that. Our most recent one is the one we adopted for the Arctic 4 years ago. That plan, by the way, was groundbreaking in terms of managing marine fisheries. It's the first time there's been a fishery management plan that closed fisheries and only opens them when there's sufficient information available to actually manage the fisheries in most cases. And that's because there had been no commercial fishing to that time in the Arctic. And so we took advantage of that and closed the Arctic to commercial fishing. There are some small subsistence, native subsistence fisheries there that aren't affected by the management plan. But our other management plans cover the groundfish fisheries of the Bering Sea, the Gulf of Alaska, as well as the crab fisheries of the of both areas, too. Stock status, and here I'll focus in on the Bering Sea because that's what I'll be talking about relative to the halibut bycatch as well. Stock status is excellent. The Bering Sea is a great example of sustainable, large-scale sustainable fisheries in a very healthy and productive marine environment. To orient you a little bit to this chart, what normally look like the what are the borders on this for many other fisheries elsewhere in the world are actually a large part of the chart. But because we have no stocks of fish, we have one minor species of crab, but no stocks of fish that are either overfished or subject to overfishing, all of our data points fall into that green area. And that's an unusual and privileged situation to be with, to be working in. And again, it's because the environment itself is sustainable and highly productive, and it's because the council has really, since our inception, been able to, as we Americanized fisheries that had been previously conducted by international companies, we were able to essentially start from scratch with sustainable principles, and we've been able to maintain that. It's a highly productive area, as I've said a couple of times. The yield out of the Bering Sea is close to 2 million metric tons of seafood every year. We're actually capped at 2 million. The allowable harvest often is as high as 2.5 or 2.7 million metric tons. We're talking about a lot of seafood. It's around half of the entire U.S. supply of seafood comes out of the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska fisheries. Again, to orient you a little bit, the left-hand side or the left-hand axis gives you a sense of just how productive those stocks are relative to the reference line. And the primary reference line that we are not to drop below is that red reference line going vertically at 0.5, but we try to keep stocks actually above the dotted blue reference line at 1.0, and as you can see, most of them are. So that gives you a sense of the biomass of each stock relative to its reference. It's not actual total abundance, but it's how far above it is its reference line. And then the vertical axis gives you a sense of what the fishing intensity is on that stock. So the higher up they are, the stock is listed on there, the greater the fishing intensity. The horizontal red line represents overfishing, and as you can see, the fishing intensity on all the stocks does not approach the overfishing line. I've circled three over there. Those are all flatfish stocks, and those are stocks that are currently subject to very low fishing intensity with very high abundances. Those are also three of the stocks that have some of the higher halibut bycatch. So you can kind of, this begins to give you a sense of the pressures that we deal with relative to this issue. We have some very productive, underutilized flatfish stocks that are very large in size, but are very difficult to access in large part because it's tough to harvest those fish without also harvesting halibut as bycatch. Again, just a sense of what we produce out of the North Pacific. The total value of the groundfish catch out of the North Pacific in 2014 was $2.3 billion. What that represents in Puget Sound, just in terms of labor value in Puget Sound, is over $1.3 billion annually to Puget Sound. In terms of the maritime industry, which I think most of you know is a big driver, over $5 billion annually in Puget Sound in terms of labor. Commercial fishing, primarily out of Alaska, is the single largest component of that $5 billion, and the North Pacific represents the vast bulk of that. And then in 2014, it was actually represented 60%. Usually we're more like 50% of the total landings. So what guides the council when we're trying to balance all these different uses is the national standards themselves that are listed in the Magnuson Act. There are 10 of them. They all come to bear to some degree or another in almost every decision we make. But when we're managing directed fisheries versus bycatch, I've highlighted a few here that really come into play, that we as a council are expected to balance these as we make our decisions. The first one is to prevent overfishing while achieving optimum yield. And that's actually a balancing act right within itself. But as you can see from the previous slide, that for us, that's a fairly simple balancing act. We don't have many problems with overfishing. And so we are able to focus on achieving optimum yield as one of the primary charges of the Magnuson Act. And that's just the basic, this is healthy seafood. We are feeding not just North America, but we're feeding international markets as well with this. We're to take into account the best scientific information, and again, for us, that's not much of a struggle. We are served by the Alaska Fisheries Science Center, which is one of several of the regional science centers, and it, along with the Northwest Fisheries Science Center, both headquartered in Seattle, contain many of the world's experts on these fisheries. So we are blessed with outstanding scientific information and outstanding scientific support. We don't have to go begging. We have a very good set of surveys that occur annually in the Bering Sea that give us a great estimate of the biomass of most of the populations in the Bering Sea. We're also to provide for the sustained... Yes?
Can I just ask a question? I don't... These pages are numbered, but the one with all the lines and the colors on it?
Mm-hmm.
These stocks that are on here, do you and your staff have a population trend for these stocks?
Sorry, I'm...
This one right here, Bill.
Yeah, I know. I've just managed to hit the wrong keys several times in a row. Yes, we do. And we can break down for each of these. Our version of the 1,000-page report is actually produced annually. It's called the SAFE Report for us, and it details for each of these individual stocks what the history has been in terms of biomass over the last 30 to 40 years, depending upon the length. And It's actually, they move around. They all fluctuate. Round fish go up, flat fish go down, and vice versa. But the basic picture is, particularly over the last 20 years, none of them have moved outside of this box. We've had a couple stocks come fairly close to the edges and then move back out into the center again. But it's been a long time since we've had any that were either overfished or subject to overfishing.
Well, I'm sure in the way that this operation works and with the quality of staff that you have on board there, there's probably a red flag that goes up pretty quickly if there's a concern, I would guess.
Yes.
Thank you.
And it, again, it's a real luxury to be able to work with that kind of knowledge. It's better than I'm able to operate the there we go.
That's why we keep Tammy here.
And the final one that I wanted to call to your attention is minimized bycatch. That's not conditioned or anything else. We're basically directed to minimize bycatch. The conditioning is the words as practicable. I mean, it's not a don't do it to the exclusion of everything else, but it's basically it's a directive that I interpret, and I think most council members interpret as you're always bycatch is not okay. You're always looking for ways to minimize it. You accept that it happens, but at the same time, you're always looking for ways to minimize it. And with that, start to focus in then on halibut bycatch. First off, how we estimate it, how we know what it is. In the Bering Sea in particular, a large part of the bycatch is actually completely observed. All factory trawlers in the Bering Sea are what we call 200% observed, which means that there are two observers or more on board at all times. And so every haul is observed and all halibut are actually enumerated. Trawl catcher vessels, so in other words, the trawlers that aren't able to process fish on board but just harvest fish using a trawl but then bring it onshore to a processor, typically smaller vessels, at this point are generally 100% observed. There's a few exceptions to that, but we're moving towards 100% observed. But for the bulk of the fisheries, where halibut bycatch is an issue, they're 100% observed, meaning there is one observer on board at all times, and they observe all hauls. They're not always on the deck, and they're not always able to actually enumerate every fish, but they use sampling techniques to estimate the numbers of halibut in every haul. Other fishing vessels have observer rates in the range of 15 to 30%, which is enough to give us it isn't enough to give us an accurate day-by-day picture of the halibut bycatch, but over the season, the accuracy with that kind of observation rate is very high.
Other vessels would be charter operators
or fishermen? No. In the Bering Sea, recreational fishing, other than a handful of boats that work out of Dutch Harbor and fish fairly close in the Bering Sea, it's a commercial show. And so other vessels include things like longliners, include pot boats fishing for cod, so other commercial gears. And the job of the observers then is first off to estimate, either enumerate or estimate the numbers of halibut in each tow and then assess their viability before they're released back or when they're discarded back to the ocean. And I'll get into that a little bit more, that viability. But we don't assume that all halibut are necessarily dead when they hit the deck coming out of a tow. And that's based on some fairly good science about, you know, the usual thing of after a fish has encountered gear. You've all heard about these kinds of hook and release type studies, and we do them as well for commercial gears. The council's role then in terms of managing bycatch is to set caps on mortality for those fisheries. And I'll go into that a lot further. And in most cases, those are hard caps, meaning if the fishery actually reaches that number, it closes. And that's NIMS then that goes ahead with doing the closures. So what the council did this year in 2015 was in response to a fairly clear problem with how halibut mortality in the Bering Sea was distributed. And I don't want to spend a lot of time going into what the IPHC has done. I'm not the expert on the IPHC, the International Pacific Halibut Commission. And I'm really not even the expert on halibut population dynamics. I understand all other groundfish population dynamics a whole lot better. So what was presented to us in 2015 was something that had been brewing for a year or two, and that is the Halibut Commission. And I think you heard from Halibut Commissioner Alverson this morning, and I think he probably gave you a pretty good description of this. As they've groped with trying to match fishing levels to biomass, particularly in the Bering Sea, and that's directed fishing levels to the biomass in the Bering Sea, they've had to make some pretty dramatic reductions over the last few years. And what we're looking at in 2015, as Bob told you this morning, is the potential that the directed fishery might not have enough allowable harvest to actually open in any functional way. Most harvesters' quota would be so small, it simply wouldn't be worth going fishing to them. And obviously that's pretty unacceptable to all parties. Not all bycatch directly contributes to that, but some large portion of the bycatch does. So it's very clear to the council that if there was a way to reduce bycatch fairly dramatically, fairly quickly, then there would be a way to keep the directed fishery on the water in 2015. And so we scrambled. There's a huge amount of debate. This is, as you can imagine, very emotional, very tense for a lot of folks. It was probably one of our most interesting years in terms of halibut, but it occupied our agenda basically all the way through the year. And so I wanted to sort of walk you through over the year what we did relative to that. And February sounds a little funny, actually, that we held a joint meeting. That's the first thing bureaucrats do when confronted with a problem. But actually, for us, that was, and for the IPHC, that was a really big deal. We had not sat down together as a council and a commission, certainly as long as I can remember. And I've been on the council for a decade. Frankly, that's inexcusable. But it was a reality. We simply had not done that. And out of that, sort of, we both got, I think, a clearer understanding of what the problems were facing us. And out of that meeting, then, we were able to formulate a plan of action. So it was actually a very good and very healthy first step. We also approved the deck sorting FEP. And I'll get into what deck sorting is, but it's just in brief right now, it's the single best tool we have for reducing the mortality of halibut taken as bycatch in trawl fisheries. And it's a very powerful tool. NIMS has been very reluctant to use it because what NIMS wants to do, has wanted to do, is give us the most accurate estimate possible of how many halibut are being encountered in these trawl fisheries. And that means you'd hang on them until they pass the observer's counting point, which is typically down in the factory itself, in the factory trawler. As you can imagine, by the time a halibut finally makes it off the deck, through the sorting tanks, and onto the conveyor belt, it's not in very good shape. Whereas if you can actually get those halibut, when they spill the trawl net on the deck, if you can get those halibut sorted out right away and back into the ocean much more quickly, they have a much, much higher survival rate, particularly the larger halibut, can be quite viable. Survival rate's up to 70 or 80% at that point, as long as the killer whales aren't hanging around waiting to pick them off. That's illegal because NIMS doesn't want people sorting fish on deck and avoiding detection that way and evading the hard caps. So doing this in a controlled fashion where NIMS and NIMS enforcement is ensured we're still getting a very good count, but where we're also meeting conservation needs has taken some real work. That's the deck sorting fishery experimental permit that we approved. In June, in a very contentious meeting, we adopted a lowered bycatch hard cap for the Bering Sea fisheries, particularly for the Amendment 80 fisheries, and I'll focus in on that a little bit more. And we began work on other measures. In October, our continuing work, first off, we developed a management framework for halibut. Again, that's something we've lacked. We don't directly manage halibut fisheries. We do manage halibut bycatch. but we've never actually had a management framework for doing that. We've got frameworks for everything else we do, but we've never had a halibut one. So a good step. And then in December, we put some more work in on that framework and also reviewed the Amendment 80 Sector Halibut Avoidance Plan, and I'll provide some more detail on all of those. So first off, the hard cap reductions. We looked at a range of options ranging from don't reduce them at all to cut them in half. And the economic consequences of the two extremes were fairly enormous. No reduction would have resulted in, not only for 2015, but probably the next couple of years, no directed fishery for halibut in the Bering Sea, which for the small fishing communities of the Bering Sea, many of which rely directly on halibut, was totally unacceptable and would have been a clear violation of the Magnuson guidelines. We also looked at a 50% reduction, which would have had consequences in terms of probably a 25% reduction in the total yield out of the Bering Sea. So somewhere between 250,000 and 500,000 metric tons of seafood harvest that would have been foregone, of groundfish harvest. So the stakes are pretty high in the discussion. And as you can imagine, the public testimony went on for quite a while, too. Ultimately, out of that, we adopted reductions of 25%, hard cap reduction for the Amendment 80 sector, 20% for what are called the CDQs, which are the Alaska Coastal Community Organizations that were created as part of the Magnuson Act that actually own part of the fishery now through the Magnuson Act. And then 15% for both the cod, freezer, longliner, and trawl limited access sectors. I'm going to focus mostly on the Amendment 80 sector because that's where the largest halibut bycatch has been, and that's the group that can provide the single biggest sort of bang for our halibut reduction buck. We're not ignoring these other sectors. We will work with them, but our first priority right now is to work with Amendment 80. So I'll be talking a lot about that. First, I want to explain a little bit about the difference in terms of how a hard cap reflects affects rationalized fisheries. Now, by a rationalized fishery, it means each harvester or each company has a known percentage of the harvest that's theirs each year of the directed harvest. And so they are accustomed to, now working under those rules, being able to make their own decisions. It stops the race for fish completely. Which removes a huge amount of the economic inefficiencies that are associated with racing for harvest and allows each company to increase their utilization. They slow down their fishery, first off. They increase the use of each product that comes on board, and then they market it in ways that are most profitable to them as a company. So they get the most value out of it as well. And that works fine until another company can affect what they do. And that's the effect of a halibut hard cap, is even though you're not racing for catch of yellowfin sole or rock sole anymore, you could still be racing for halibut bycatch under a hard cap. In other words, you catch as many of your allowable quota as you can before the halibut bycatch hard cap gets triggered. So the race is reinstituted all of a sudden, which is a really bad thing from our point of view. So we use hard caps really sparingly because we do everything we can to avoid the race for fish. There's also ecological consequences that come with racing for fish, too. So what the companies do to avoid racing for fish, then, is they go ahead and they sort of assign, they break up the hard cap and essentially apportion the hard cap to each company. But then in order to further sort of guard against reinstituting the race, they buffer that down. So you don't get the, if you have, say, just hypothetical example, if you have 25% of the catch of rock sole, you don't get 25% of the halibut bycatch cap that goes with rock sole. You get a buffer down level to guard against oopses. Because the more you break small numbers down, and these halibut bycatch numbers are very small numbers compared to the very large numbers of directed fishery. And the more you break a small number down, the more management difficulty you have. And so the more management difficulty you have, the greater a management buffer you need to ensure that no one company is, in essence, taking everybody else off the water by a management oops. So those buffers. So a 25% hard cap reduction becomes more like a 30 or sometimes even 35% reduction through the application of the buffers. Complicated but important, because every time you impose one of these hard caps, it has all these secondary sort of implications. The hard caps work great from the standpoint of halibut, but they work really poorly from the standpoint of managing the rest of the groundfish fishery. But they are currently our only tool. We're working towards other tools, though. So, Amendment 80.
Excuse me.
Yes.
Are there other tools that the companies can apply, not knowing anything about the behavior of these fish? For example, do halibut ever school?
Talking about what some of those tools are.
Okay.
Our tool is the hard cap. What the company's tools are what I'm now going to start talking about,
okay,
because that's where you get the greatest savings. Hard caps actually work poorly, again, because people fish up to them. And frycankly, nobody wants halibut in bycatch. That's not its use. You don't want to encourage people to fish up to a number, just like a salmon hard cap in these same fisheries. You don't ever want anybody fishing up to the salmon hard cap. You want them fishing towards zero. And again, that's where the national standards take you to, is continue to minimize bycatch. But generally, people fish up to a hard cap. So what do the companies do, and what can the companies do? First off, to avoid fouling up each other's business plans, but also to continue that pressure towards zero. We'll never get to zero, but that should always be where the pressure is going. So the Amendment 80 sector, and again, they're the sector with the single largest bycatch, at the request of the council, developed over the last 6 months, developed a halibut avoidance plan that sets up first a set of penalties for performance that's worse than average. And there's been a broad range of behavior in the Amendment 80 sector. Some companies fish very well in terms of halibut bycatch, and some companies fish very poorly. It's all been within the allowable bycatch, nothing illegal, but a clear, some companies have cared a lot about bycatch for a long time and done very well. Other companies haven't cared as much. And so this was designed to tighten all that up and have everybody become a better-than-average performer, so to speak. So we used outliers as the way of detecting performance, or they're proposing the use of outliers. And this is something then they'll administer within their sector. We don't have to do it. We will monitor how well it works. We'll monitor how well it's implemented, but we don't have to do it. They apply their own penalties. When the federal government does it, we have to build in a whole appeals process, and it can take several years. They can do it through civil law just like that, and that's how they do it, is through civil law, through contractual law. So this is what they've developed. What they're initially talking about is penalties for failing these tests of $50,000 to $100,000 per vessel per year. We'll find out how well those will work over time. And then the more important point is that the council will receive reports on how this is working every year and an evaluation, and then we can determine whether we want to ask them to do more. But a plan fairly similar in overall nature, very different in details, but similar in overall nature for managing Chinook salmon bycatch in the Bering Sea pollock fishery has succeeded very, very well to date. So, in addition to sort of the outlier tests that they've adopted as their overall sort of management plan, they have a series of best practices. These were adopted actually at the beginning of 2015 and resulted in a fair amount of savings on the water, enough savings on the water that the IPHC felt comfortable opening up putting enough fish in the directed fishery in the Bering Sea that the Bering Sea directed halibut fishery stayed open, simply through the application of these best practices. So we're anticipating that with continued refinement on these best practices, plus then implementation of the sort of the performance test and pulling all the companies together, we're anticipating a fairly significant overall reduction in halibut bycatch on a continuing basis. So the elements of that, first and foremost, halibut don't necessarily school up, but there are definitely hot spots. They're not predictable between years very well, but within a year they're fairly predictable. And so making sure that they're fully exchanging information about where they're, what their halibut bycatch rates are, where the clean fishing is, where the dirty fishing is, where nobody knows, where nobody's been for a little while. Taking short tows prior to taking a regular full tow. In other words, dip your net in, see what you get in the way of bycatch if nobody's been there for a while. Voluntarily moving away from areas with high halibut rates, and now this new performance plan that they've got will put some teeth in that movement away from the areas. And then using halibut excluders, which are still very much a developing technology. They can get them to work pretty well for the larger halibut. They're significantly larger than the target, but a lot of the halibut they're catching in the Bering Sea are the same size as the flatfish they're catching. And excluders rely on differential swimming power. So if you're a much bigger fish, more powerful swimmer, you can use an excluder pretty well. If you're the same size fish as the size that the net's designed to catch, pretty hard to develop an excluder. So selective use of halibut excluders, though, particularly relative to freeing up the larger fish. And then, as I mentioned, deck sorting. Still fairly challenging for us because their still first responsibility is to know exactly how many halibut are being impacted by these fisheries. And so getting an accurate enumeration. But the ability to put fish overboard quickly. So right now, the way we're working on this is through an experimental permit. We have not adopted deck sorting as part of our permanent regs yet. We're still trying to fine-tune in. I think it'll take another couple years. But over half the vessels in the fleet right now are participating in the experiment, and we expect the other half to come in over the next year or two. It is costly. Right now, in addition to the two observers they're required to carry just for general purposes, in 2015 they were required to carry two more if they were going to engage in deck sorting, whose sole job was to work the deck sorting end. I think we're going to be able to work that down from four maybe to three, and then maybe ultimately to the use of cameras and what we'll call discard chutes that actually have cameras built in them. And as long as we're sure that every fish that goes overboard goes to the chute, we may be able to use some automated systems. Those are still under development as well. But the fleet right now is bearing the cost of carrying four observers instead of two. As you can imagine, that's a pretty significant cost. Over time. But it does appear to be very, very promising for the factory trawlers. It's not a help for the catcher vessels where their catch pretty much goes straight out of the net and into the hold and then, you know, doesn't get pumped out until they get back into town. So they may have to work on that afterwards. But the big numbers are still in the factory trawler in terms of halibut bycatch. So this is the promising place to start. This does look like this alone may be able to reduce halibut mortality in the bycatch, and that's what counts from the IPHC perspective as well as ours. May be able to be able to reduce that by a third alone through this. We've got our fingers crossed. But industry is putting a lot of time and effort into doing this, and the agency, National Marine Fisheries Service, is working with them. So then the council is working on, as I mentioned earlier, what we're calling our halibut management framework. First off, establishing management objectives for halibut bycatch. We've never done that. We've never made it clear that it needs to be managed consistent with the Magnuson-Stevens Act, that it needs to be balanced. We're very interested in trying to manage bycatch based on abundance of halibut. In other words, during these periodic times of lower productivity and lower allowable halibut harvest, we want to make sure you're working extra hard to achieve bycatch reductions. Maybe not worry quite as much at times of higher abundance. But again, as I mentioned right at the front, the Magnuson Act says you're always trying to reduce bycatch. So it's not like it's okay necessarily to increase bycatch just because abundance has risen, but it is clear that you've got to work extra hard to reduce bycatch when productivity is down. recognizing the sustained participation in the fisheries, both of the coastal communities, but also the groundfish fisheries, and continuing to improve what we can do for monitoring and catch accounting. And finally, improve coordination with the IPHC, which is something that we've needed to do for a long time and have not. So, beyond 2016, what can we look towards? First off, bycatch will be reduced significantly. That's clear now. We have the tools to do it. Many of these tools are newly available. We simply hadn't had previous to within the last couple of years. Industry is now incentivized, highly incentivized, and an incentivized industry can produce some pretty extraordinary results. As a council, we will continue to work to improve our relationship with the IPHC so that we are truly jointly managing. And stop surprising each other, which we've done some in the past. One I'm really looking forward to is understanding halibut from the ecosystem level. We don't have a clear understanding. Our ecosystem level understanding of most other groundfish is a lot better than our understanding of halibut, and halibut are doing some very strange things in the Bering Sea and Gulf of Alaska that the other groundfish aren't. And again, Bob Alverson may have mentioned this morning. But trying to get a handle on that's pretty important. That's something we're really good at. Is applying ecosystem-level science to groundfish as a council. And so I'm very much looking forward to that. That should give us a lot more insight. But this will continue to be a real challenge for us as a council. Even with some significant reductions, the basic fact remains, even when you've got bycatch down well below a percent of 2 million metric tons is a huge number. And it can well be a totally unsustainable number for the bycatch species. So we're going to be struggling with this as a council forever, really. But we've got better tools to address it than we had previously, and I think we've got a renewed will to take it on, too. So with that, be happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Bill. Questions from the commission? Mr. Carpenter.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bill, this morning Bob talked about a theory, I guess, or a conceptual view of halibut from the Bering Sea that seed southerly down through British Columbia, Gulf of Alaska, British Columbia, and down even, I thought he said, to California. I don't know if I have that right. Is there any additional information about that that's available? Because that seems to be quite an important activity.
I'm not a halibut scientist. But I've had to learn quite a bit about halibut in the last couple of years. The scientific advice that the IPHC gets has changed fairly dramatically over the last decade. It used to be said at the IPHC that Bering Sea halibut are kind of a Bering Sea problem, and they're not really connected with everything else. The IPHC scientists have been doing some good tagging work starting in the last few years with these new technology pop-up tags and have found a lot more movement out of the Bering Sea than they'd previously known. So the IPHC no longer manages halibut as the Bering Sea separate from the rest of the coast. They now manage them as a coastal stock from the Bering Sea all the way down to Washington. And then I think Bob walked you through how they sort of break it down into the sub-areas. That's based on an understanding that there's a lot more movement than previously thought, but they don't, at this point, have enough information to know how much of that movement was. And they put out some tags. They saw some movement. They also didn't see a lot of those tags ever again. And so that leaves you with that some of those fish move, but you don't know how important that is to the population. And that's the context that the IPHC is still trying to put on this. So how much of an effect does the Bering Sea bycatch, which is large, and clearly has a large effect on the Bering Sea harvest, how much of an effect does that have on harvests in the Gulf of Alaska, off British Columbia and off our shores? It's unquantifiable at this time, and it's actually unknowable still at this time. So instead of trying to sort of figure out this problem from that perspective, which is kind of where the council had been stuck for a while, was trying, well, Isn't this just a Bering Sea problem? Now we're looking at it simply from the standpoint of, look, the Magnuson Act says you minimize bycatch where practicable. Let's just minimize bycatch where practicable. We will know a lot more. We'll probably be able to answer your question a lot better in a couple of years. We can't answer it now.
Thank you.
Mr. Keel.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Bill. I know we're getting close to lunch, but I just wanted to say, first of all, that, and just so I'm sure the director knows, or he should know, that the department is very lucky to have somebody like Bill Twite representing the state on the council. I mean, I don't, in my realm, I don't deal with the council, but I do have colleagues in Alaska and Washington, and I know that Bill is very well respected, and it's a tough job. This was a really, really big issue, and I know that. And the other thing I wanted to just mention to the commission is kind of, well, why are we talking about the Bering Sea? What does that have to do with Washington? Well, it has a lot to do with Washington, as Bill alluded to. I mean, in terms of, the North Pacific Fleet is based in the Puget Sound. Big employer, big economic engine. It's not all Microsoft or Adobe or the other software companies or Amazon. It's, these are good working jobs, and this is a big deal. And then also too, so you've got the sector, the big commercial, the Tridents and so on. You've also got small boats. And Bob Alverson represents that group. Many of my members fish halibut as well. And this issue has really become acute, and Bob gave you this one of these handouts. I mean, as you see, as the exploitable biomass has been going down, this all eyes were focused on this very large halibut bycatch. I like your statement here at the end of your presentation that you didn't say, but you said you didn't specifically mention, but even a small percentage of a very large number is still a large number. I mean, and I think that captures it very well. I guess my only my suggestion and request, and I'm sure you don't need to be reminded of this, is and I think all of these practices are good. It's a good step forward. I think it's important, however, to have some sort of accountability and really make sure that that these efforts are followed through. I understand the difficulties that the feds have in implementing it, and you're relying upon the groups themselves to work it out on a contract basis, but. I really do think and encourage you as Washington's representative to make sure that that these things do get accomplished and that there's accountability by folks. And we might ask you to kind of come back maybe and give us an update periodically. And on another issue that's very important too, and you talked about it, is rationalization. That's another big issue in the Gulf that affects many, many small boat owners here based in Washington. So, but in any event, so thanks a lot, Bill. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner. I really appreciate the kind words. This is my favorite slide in the whole presentation. Almost the only other council in the U.S. that comes close to this is the Pacific Council. And the Pacific Council, a decade ago, didn't even have this good a report card. It's a real privilege to be working in a process like this that truly is managing sustainable fisheries in a healthy environment. It is really a privilege, and it makes it very enjoyable. Even the tough fights are a lot easier to have when you've got this kind of a biological backdrop. The halibut problems right now are yield problems. They're not fundamental problems with the stock. I alluded to some ecological issues that are going on there that we don't understand. But it's still, there's a lot of halibut out there. They're not growing the way they should, and they're not, therefore, there's not a lot of harvestable legal biomass, and that's a huge problem. But it's not a conservation problem yet. We don't ever want it to become one. But for me, this is a privilege. Being able to represent the state of Washington in fisheries like this is a real privilege, and I am appreciative to the agency for that opportunity. So thank you for that. I appreciate the request for accountability. I think that's great, and I'd be happy to come back. As you can tell, I can talk about this for quite a while. And with a smile on my face as I do it. So I'd be happy to come back and give periodic progress reports, not just on halibut, but on some of the other issues as well. Yeah.
Good work, Bill.
All this talk of halibut makes me hungry. So thanks, Bill, as always.